But in but not of, that has been our theme now since January 1. We live in this world, our feet are stuck in this world. But we're not of this world. We're not like this world. We don't look like, talk like, do the things that the world does. And we've talked about a lot of different subjects in that manner. And for part four now, for 4 weeks, with a break in between there, we've talked about marriage. And the fact that our world's view of marriage is broken. That it doesn't look like God's view of marriage. That God's view of marriage is one man, one woman for life. And anything else is detestable to Him. We've talked about the fact that we have roles in marriage. That husband is to love his wife as Christ loved the church. And the woman is to respect her husband and submit. We talked about some practical things that we can do on a daily basis to make our marriages more beautiful. And so we're going to wrap it up today, as I said. Wow, I didn't get that one formatted. A few thoughts, and here they are in advance. The responsibilities of a child of God married to a non-Christian. The responsibilities of one considering obeying the gospel, married to one who's not interested. The responsibilities of either partner when the other will not step up spiritually. And then the responsibilities of either partner when the other, Christian or not, acts in an unchristian manner. Now then, talked about the fact that when we looked at God's plan, husband, wife, the roles that they fill, that because of our world's mindset, it's not easy. It's not easy if you're the wife to look at God's plan where He says submit to your husband and everything and make yourself do that. We looked at the fact that when He says love unconditionally, not based on our feelings, not based on what we want to do, but love as Christ loved the church, for men, that's hard. This one's not any easier. All right, these things that we're about to look at can be difficult to wrestle with. Number one, the responsibilities of a child of God married to a non-Christian. So you're the wife and the husband is not a Christian. You're the husband and the wife is not a Christian. How do I go about making that work? Because a marriage where one partner is a member of the church and one is not can be stressful at best. And it can actually be a whole lot more than stressful. It can be backbreaking. It can be soul crushing. So how do I handle it? If I'm the Christian in that relationship, what are my responsibilities to that marriage and to that partner to be what God wants me to be? Because remember, we're going to talk about this again in a minute. We talked about it just recently. I answer to God for myself. Even in my marriage, and we'll stand before God in a sense as a couple in that we had responsibilities to each other, but I'm going to stand in front of Him as an individual and give an account of the things that I've done in the flesh, whether they be good or whether they be evil. And so in a marriage where you're not both hitched to the same cart, but you're hitched to each other, how do I do my part and make it work? So, 1 Peter chapter 3, verses 1 and 2. In the same way, you wives, be submissive to your own husbands, so that even... Now, here's the part I'm wanting to focus on, because we've already focused on the first part of it. Even if any of them are disobedient to the word, they may be won without a word by the behavior of their wives as they observe your chaste and respectful behavior. Matthew 7 and verse 12, that golden rule, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. In that marriage relationship, if I am, in this case, Peter's using the wife, if I'm the wife and the husband is not obedient to the word, how do I win him? Notice Peter doesn't say beat him over the head of the club. Don't hound him to death. Don't shame him to death. Peter says what? Fulfill your role. be who you're supposed to be. And by your behavior, if he's winnable, you can win him. And so, what, Peter? In a relationship where one's a Christian and one's a not, the Christian responsibility is the same as it always was. Be a child of God. Be a Christian. Do what you're supposed to do. Treat that other individual as you would want him or her to treat you. On the male side, if we reverse what Peter's talking about, what do? I love my wife with all of my heart. She may not be a child of God. She may not be pulling in the same direction I'm doing, but I have agreed to that marriage covenant. And in that marriage covenant, I've been told as the child of God and the husband in that, that my job is to love her as Christ loved the church. How do I win her? I win her by loving her. I win her by being exactly what God has told me to be, not by being something else. Go back to the very first thing we talked about when we talked about marriage. God's plan always works when we follow it. And so if we're in a marriage relationship where one's a Christian and one is not, the way to make it work is to follow God's plan. To be that child of God. We're not going to win a spouse to Christ with disrespect, with anger, with verbal abuse, with etc. We're going to win that spouse by being the spouse we're supposed to be. We're going to make changes through Christian living. Number two, the responsibilities of one considering obeying the gospel. Married to one who's not interested. All right, male or female, it doesn't matter. Been coming to church, been studying, on the verge of doing what you know you need to do, but you're not getting the support at home. Yeah, you don't have a spouse who's interested in church or interested in the church or interested in the gospel. And you're torn between the relationship that you know is a covenant before God and that love for that individual and yet your call to the gospel. Number one, I just mentioned it, 2 Corinthians 5 and verse 10. Realize you answer for yourself. Male or female, in that relationship, you will answer, he or she will answer for self. We're all going to stand before the judgment seat of Christ to give an account of the deeds that we've done in the flesh, whether they're good or whether they're evil. Yes, you'll be there as the spouse of so-and-so, but you're going to be judged as Bill or Tom or Kim or Sue or whomever before God. And so your salvation has to come first. You have to love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your mind, with all your soul, and all your strength to be right with God. You've got to fix that relationship regardless what this relationship says about it, because you're going to stand before God. Matthew chapter 10, verse 34 through 39. Understand if you're in that position where you're trying to obey the gospel, you're thinking about obeying the gospel, it's on your mind, whatever the case is, and there is a pull that is pulling you in another direction, and it could be a spouse, could be children, could be mom and dad, could be whomever. Understand there is no price too high to pay for the gospel. Matthew 10, starting at verse 34. Do you think that I came to bring peace on the earth? I did not come to bring peace, but a sword. Now, they'd understand that this is the same Jesus that offers peace in other passages. So he's not talking about spiritual peace. He's not talking about us being at peace with God. He's talking about, I came to set man against his father, daughter against mother, daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law. Man's enemies will be the members of his household. What are you talking about, Jesus? He said, I've brought a gospel to you that not everybody can buy. And so it is at times going to divide your relationships. But he said, you can't let those relationships keep you from doing what you're supposed to do. Verse 37, he who loves father or mother more than me is not worthy of me. He who loves son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me. And you can add whatever relationship in that list you want to add. He who does not take his cross and follow after me is not worthy of me. He who has found his life shall lose it. Who has lost his life for my sake shall find it. Jesus looks at the disciples and he says, obedience to the gospel at times is going to cost you your earthly relationships. He said, pay the price. He said, if you love somebody on that earth more than you love me, you're not worthy. He said, is it a cross to bear? Absolutely. You're going to have to bear it every day. And it's not going to be easy. It may cause, what did we talk about in that first point? It may cause stress in the household for one to be a member of the body of Christ and one not to be. But he said, this one who's come to that understanding still has to obey the gospel. Because you have to put me first. What's he say in Matthew 16, 24 through 26? What in the world are you going to give in exchange for your soul? He said, not even your marriage relationship is worth the price of your soul. So seek first the kingdom of God and His righteousness. And let God take care of the rest of it. When one comes to a knowledge of the truth, he or she must do what is right, regardless the opposition, regardless the consequences. Because back to that first one, 2 Corinthians 5:10, I stand in judgment before God based on my deeds, based on whether or not I've obeyed the gospel. 2 Thessalonians chapter 1, verses 7 through 9. Number 3, what are the responsibilities of either partner when the other will not step up spiritually? Maybe you're both children of God, just not pulling your weight. How do I handle it? Well, what about the wife? Exodus chapter 4, verse 27. Moses is in the process of going back to Egypt to rescue the children of Israel. And even though he's been raised as the son of Pharaoh's daughter, he's been taught who he is. Because remember, when he sees the Egyptian beating the Hebrew slave, he intervenes for his people's sake. So he knows he's a Jew. He knows what he's supposed to be doing. For whatever reason, that has not stuck with him in the wilderness. Because he has not circumcised his child. And so it says in Exodus chapter 4, starting verse 27, go meet Moses, Aaron. Send him to the mountain of God and he kissed him. Moses told Aaron, wait a minute, that is not where I'm supposed to be reading. Where in the world did it go? Hold on, I have lost my place. I have typed the wrong thing. Skip back up to verse 24. That's where I'm supposed to be. Came about at the lodging place on the way that the Lord met him. And so, Moses, you're in the burning bush with God. And God says, Moses, go to Egypt. Get my people. And then you turn the page and it says, God's seeking to kill him. Why? Because he didn't circumcise his son. So Zipporah took a flint and cut off her son's foreskin and threw it at Moses' feet. You're indeed a bridegroom of blood to me. And he left him alone. Zipporah had to step up spiritually and circumcise the child to save Moses' life. Because Moses hadn't done what he was supposed to do. So what do you do in a marriage relationship where one of the partners is not stepping up? You take on an extra role. You do what has to be done to save your family spiritually. What about on the other side of it? Best example that I could think of, or I actually thought of too, Genesis 19, verse 26. Lot and his family are fleeing Sodom and Gomorrah. And Lot's got to do what? He's got to save his wife, he's got to save himself, and he's got to save his two daughters. And as they're running, Lot's wife does what? She looks back and turns to a pillar of salt. Does Lot go back and try to get her? He steps up spiritually. Girls, we got to go. We've got to get far enough away this doesn't happen to us. And then the book of Hosea, and we just talked about this story not too long ago. Hosea is sent to marry a woman who is a prostitute. And she goes back to that life. In chapter 3, God comes back to Hosea and says, look, I want you to go back and love a woman who loves somebody else. And Hosea actually has to say, I went and paid for my wife back. I had to buy my wife back to me. So what do you do when you're the spiritual side of the relationship and the other one's not going to step up? Hosea stepped up. He said, I'm just going to save this marriage one way or the other. I'm going to do everything I can to save this marriage. So it doesn't matter which side of the marriage you're on. If the other partner's not stepping up, just do more. You're responsible for yourself. You're responsible for your children. You're responsible for that relationship. Do more. Husbands and fathers are supposed to be the spiritual leaders of the home. And guess what? Sometimes we're not. And mama has to step up. Sometimes dad or the husband finds himself pulling the cart by himself because mama's not doing her part. He's got to keep pulling. He can't let the cart bog down. Number four. What are the responsibilities of either partner when the other, and it's Christian or not, acts in an unchristian manner? In the world, we're taught what? We're taught to lash out. We're taught to hurt before we get hurt. We're taught to hurt because we were hurt. You get mistreated, you mistreat back. You're on the receiving end of anger, you get angry. You get neglected, you have an affair. James even writes about this attitude in James chapter 4, starting in verse 1, going down through verse 5. He says, what is the source of the quarrels that you're having between you? It's your lust. It's your desires. You want one thing and you're not getting it, so you go after it in an inappropriate way. And so you're not getting what you want, so you go about it in a sinful manner. He even goes on to say that, well, maybe you're not asking for it in the right way is why you're not getting what you need, say, out of your marriage relationship. But watch this. Watch the end of that reading in James 4. Look at verse 5. Verse 4. You adulteresses, do you not know that friendship with the world is hostility toward God? Whoever wishes to be a friend of the world makes himself an enemy of God. Do you think that the Spirit speaks to no purpose? He jealously desires the Spirit which He has made to dwell in us. Again, I want you to put that in the context of a marriage relationship. Friendship with the world is to be an enemy of God. Well, the world says hurt because you hurt. The world says lash out because you lash out. Well, I take that and I apply that to my marriage. My wife did this to me, so I did this back. My wife said this, so I said this back. My wife acted like this, so I went and did. I've now made myself a friend of the world, brought it into my marriage relationship, and I have separated myself from God. So what are we called to do? Paul, warns against the idea. He said, what are you doing? You're turning on each other and you're biting and devouring each other in the church. Can we not do that in our marriages? Absolutely. A quality that Peter says belongs to Satan. He's the roaring lion seeking whom he may devour. So when we start devouring each other, we're acting like Satan, even in our marriage relationships. So what do we do? What's an answer to it? Why would we take a worldly attitude and put it in our marriages? Why would we act like that towards someone that we're supposed to love? We've been called to such a higher standard. We've already looked at this in Matthew 7 and verse 12. We're told to do unto others as we would have them do unto us. And so I'm to treat my spouse the way I want to be treated. Which means if I'm not getting the treatment I'm wanting, it's very likely I'm not giving the treatment that I should be giving. What about Romans chapter 12? Never pay back evil for evil to anyone. So that's going to include a marriage relationship. Respect what is right in the sight of all men. If possible, so far as it depends on you, be at peace with all men. Never take your own revenge. Leave room for the wrath of God. Vengeance is mine, I will repay. If your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he's thirsty, give him a drink. In doing so, you will reap burning coals upon his head. Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. James 4 and verse 17, to him that knows to do good and does it not, to him it's sin. Matthew 5, 43 and 44, love your enemies, pray for those who persecute you. Here's the point. There is never a right time to do a wrong thing. He did this to me. He did this to me. He did this to me. So I'm going to go and do. No. No. Another person's actions, no matter how sinful they are, do not give me the right to be sinful myself. I'll give you an example, sitting in marriage counseling. What did I do to cause this? And it can be an affair, it can be lashing out, it can be neglect, whatever. And the innocent one, the hurt one, begins to list, well, I did this, and I did this, and I did this, so she did this, he did that. Doesn't matter how many end up on this side of the list of things that I did wrong in my marriage, it never gives the other person the right to do something wrong. Wrong is wrong regardless what prompted it. Doesn't matter how badly another treats you, in this case a spouse, it doesn't give you a license to do the same. Is that easy? Oh my goodness, no. Never. Turn the other cheek. If that was easy, he wouldn't have put it in there. Love like you want to be loved. Do good when you feel like doing the opposite. Love when you feel unloved. Respect when it's not earned. Forgive when it's not deserved, when you don't feel like forgiving. No, that's not easy. Christianity was never promised to be easy. When he starts in Matthew chapter 5 with the Sermon on the Mount, the very first time he sits down to teach these people, he starts turning their world upside down. Blessed are the persecuted. Blessed are the poor in spirit. Turn the other cheek. Love your enemies. Pray for those who persecute you. He's calling us to be the bigger person in every relationship. And it is hard, hard work. But now, what have we learned? Four studies on marriage. We figured out how, if we're going to make it work, how to do it. Number one, any study of marriage begins and ends with God's plan. One man, one woman for life. It is a covenant before God that we've got to fix if we break it. Number two, building a healthy marriage requires effort. That God designed the role that I'm to fill, and He designed the role that my spouse is supposed to fill. And if we want it to be healthy and beautiful and blessed, we fill those roles. And the two become one healthy, beautiful relationship before the throne of God. Number three, there are practical marriages we can implement. There are things that I can do every day when I get up to fortify my marriage against divorce and to make it all it's supposed to be. And then number four, we're called to live godly in spite of our surroundings. And in spite of our relationships. If we would focus in those directions and implement, will our marriages be perfect? Depends on your definition of perfect. You're dealing with flawed humanity. There are going to be chinks in the armor. Paul had his, Peter had his, John had his. Can it be perfect in the eyes of God? Moses was blameless in the eyes of God. And so, yeah, we can have things that are perfect and blameless in the eyes of God because we do them His way. As far as this morning's thought, number one, if you're thinking about obeying the gospel, if you've come to a knowledge of the truth, but you're afraid of what mom and daddy think or what your children think or what your spouse thinks, look, you've got to take that out of the equation. You have got to deal with your soul salvation first. And if you do that, who knows what the response of that other person may be anyway. You may win that mother, father, sister, brother, spouse to Christ by your actions. Number two, if you're in a marriage relationship where you're the only one hitched to the cart and pulling for God, keep pulling. Don't quit. Keep pulling, and sooner or later, maybe he or she will start pulling too. And the big thing that jumped in my mind as I was studying this, guys, if you're in a marriage relationship that's not what you want it to be, it doesn't give you a right to lash out, to be angry, to hurt back, to get back at the other person. You keep doing what's right. If you're subject to the invitation for any of those reasons or any other reason you might have this morning, if you need to obey the gospel, if you need the prayers of the church, if you need counseling or studying, whatever, please. Please don't leave here broken when you're being offered the opportunity for God to fix you as we stand and sing.